And now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Are we on the air again? By golly, that's
where
us.
Where are we?
We got to quit partying in here and do something with people that are listening out there. You ready for that?
I'm ready for that.
I am ready for hour two of the El Paso History Show. It has starting now with an El Paso History Moment. It's produced by Melissa Sargent. I've heard of her.
Who's that?
And she's with the El Paso History Alliance on this case. You jump chairs and you turn into somebody else. But today, your history moment is about a 1904 El Paso brewery. The El Paso brewery also turned into an electric company.
Beer lights up the neighborhood. In 1904, several El Paso businessmen headed by E.B. Welch, George Pence, and others organized the El Paso Brewing Association. They began construction of a state-of-the-art brewing plant that would produce 250 barrels of ale and porter a day. The first hurdle for the association was a power source for the brewery, so the association constructed an electrical power plant that was so powerful that the association in the end not only provided power to the brewery, but made power available to the Lata subdivision that surrounded the brewery and what was then East El Paso. The brewery officially opened on July 20, 1904, with an enormous banquet and live music. But the party quickly ended in 1905. The brewery went into receivership and was sold at auction for $66,000. More history next week on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
La 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 la.
Like that, huh?
Yeah, hey, Bernie's learning how to play the organ there.
That's not an organ, an
accordion.
Squeeze box.
Okay, yeah. Okay, now can he also do the foot pedals on an organ if he has one of those?
I don't know, but he used to play accordion as a kid.
Oh, I play the radio. I've been doing that since
Erie,
I was 12.
Pennsylvania, you know.
So it goes. Well, now that is the history moment, and that's with the History Alliance, right?
That's right.
How many people on Facebook for them?
Oh my God, they're over 55,000. And
I got to change that. 55,000.
Yeah, and Max, I have to say, is done an incredible job. You know, it's Max Grossman, and he has done an incredible job with the site and keeps a lot of information, a lot of architectural history and information, and people share.
He's an interesting magnet for a number of reasons.
Yeah. And if you want to talk to Bernie, he's, of course, on the Alliance also, and you can call him at 915-581-7920. And we have another great partner from the El Paso, Remember in El Paso, the site drives me crazy. Remember
Facebook.
Facebook. Remember in El Paso when. It's like, that's Barbara Given Baney's team over there, and they have great history and pictures.
They have thousands and thousands of people on there, and they police it pretty good, so you don't duplicate the pictures. Some people used to do that, throw them off.
She's over 25,000.
Oh, it's up there. She does a very good job of getting that thing organized. They have another administrator down there, John B. Hogan. And a new moderator showed up, Ron Tabor. And it's a bunch of people working on that. So we thank for all of those people for doing what they do. Barbara is the ringleader.
Yeah,
how about
she's the queen.
Ringleader. We got Al Borrego still here. Hey, Al, are you up for a call from somebody you already know?
Sure.
Are you ready?
It must be George.
It is. It is. It's George Sanchez. Good morning, George.
Good morning, you guys.
Hey.
Hard not to be surprised with you, George.
This is that highly paid volunteer at the museum in San Elizario who is currently unemployed.
I know. apply for money.
You've been furloughed.
Listen, I wanted my cousin Al Borrego to mention how people can get the Los Portales newsletter or the newsletter for the San Elizario genealogy, because in it there's a lot of pictures of when he went to Mexico, the sister cities that San Elizario has, quite a bit of information, and two very nice articles, one by my cousin Sam Sanchez, talking about one of his ancestors, and the other one by, guess who? George Sanchez.
I've heard of George Sanchez.
Where does he live?
he's as famous in his own mind. Is that the same guy?
Yes.
Yeah, and like you say, he's related to everybody.
That's right.
Including the Holy Roman Emperor Charlemagne. That's one of the stories in the newsletter. But anyway, I'm going to hang up and I'll have El Borrego tell people how they can get the newsletter.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Sanchez. Appreciate it. You take her easy. See you in the streets.
Bye, George.
We'll see you in the streets, and that street would be the Camino Real.
That's right.
All right, got Al Borrego here. He is the president of the San Elizario Genealogy and Historical Society. Say that real fast three times, and you'll get him on the phone. Hey, Al, what about that newsletter?
That newsletter, you get it by becoming a member.
Aha. Uh-huh.
of the society. It's a big old $15 a year.
Ooh.
But you can also get it. You can get it for free on our website, SantaGenealogy.com. It's under news. And we have all of our newsletters are in there. You can download them for free and all that. But, of course, we can take that support for $15 a year.
Well, you could use the support. Why not?
Now, Al, if people want to get a hold of you also, is there a number they could call you on?
Yeah, there's the numbers are there on they're there on the website.
Okay.
Our numbers are there. They can also reach me via Facebook, of course, Al Borrego on Facebook. My phone and my personal number's on there.
Okay.
But they can reach me easily for whatever, you know, if you need a new mask or something, you know.
A new mask? What kind of mask are you? I don't want to know about
that. His will scare away the COVID. There we go.
Let's don't go there. We'll get stuff on the news segment in about 20 minutes. But no, we had a caller wanted to know if that guy found something. He said he found it on the Camino Real. Who knows? But it was a piece of an axe head.
What he thinks like an antique antiquity of an axe head.
The blade of an axe. Say that was real on the Camino Real. Or what if somebody actually found a Spanish helmet or whatever? You know, they're plowing the field and there it is. Sure. What do you do with that? Who do you take that to?
Well, I mean, you can take it to, take it to a museum. That's the first thing you want to do. We've actually found here in San Elizario, one of the farmers here found a sword and a dagger together out in the field. And we did have it tested, and it does date back into the early 1800s.
Cool.
So, I mean, we've also found, of course, here, because the Camino Real actually goes through the historic district, we've also found, like, old army spoons, a U.S. spoon with a U.S. on it, a fork. We found different things, you know, that we found here locally. But you can see them at the museum or at the old El Paso County Jail. Showcase there.
That brings up something I was curious about. I went down there to Chicken Ranch Road, and that is an interesting place. Is that the Camino Real basically as it heads toward Mexico?
No, not really. But it does go. See, you got to remember the river was not there
right
back during that period. The river was further east of us. So the basic trail coming up comes from Brajedis, Guerrero, which is right south of Tornillo, right south of Caseta. And you know where the county lakes are, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them.
El Paso County Lakes. Right there is basically where the expedition hit the river. See, you can see the river was really there still today in the exact same spot. So they hit the river there on April the 20th, and then they continued up. They got to San Elizario area. It didn't exist, of course, but they got to this area around April 26th. This is where which was high ground. They decided that this is where they'd build a nave big enough to have a mass, and then ultimately on April the 30th, they had the mass and the toma, and all of that happened on April the 30th. That's why we do the conference normally in April.
Well, did that happen at Hart's Mill, or what happened? Where was this toma?
No, that was here.
Oh, okay.
That was here in San Elizario. Hart's Mill, that area there up in El Paso, that happened on April the 4th is when they got, or May the 4th.
May the 4th.
May the 4th is when they got to that area, and they're all on the south side of the river there during the whole time. They get to that area, that's where they actually cross the river.
And by then, they were celebrating Cinco de Mayo with a Corona beer. No, we're not going to go there. But no, the thing, back to your reality, what you've got going on in the way of history is fascinating. What you're doing about it is even more interesting, because a modern day look at all this stuff, you've got all kinds of people on here, New Mexico Bureau of Land Management, the National Trails, National Park Service. I see down here our main man from the Tiguas, Rick Quesada, the Cultural Preservation Officer. You got a lot of people at this conference coming up. The conference, again, has been moved from April to September. What are the dates in September?
10th through the 13th. September the 10th, we always start the first day in Mexico. We actually have it in Juarez. We start the first day in Juarez. It's a binational conference, so we will start there. We have a bus that actually will pick you up on the, we need a passport. We'll pick you up here in San Elizario, take you over in the morning, and you can spend the day there. That first day will be at the Museum of the Revolution is where we'll start with a conference there and speakers there. And then we do a quick tour, day visit of the San Jose Mission, and you can see restoration, conservation at its best with the National Institute. And then from there, we'll move to the mission there at Guadalupe, which was the original mission. And that's Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is done in 1659, the little one that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing
not
to see.
The cathedral.
No. The cathedral is a modern-day, like, 1950s, yes. 48, 50, yes. somewhere yep. near. But that little tiny building was all by itself. Yeah. I believe that was the first mm-hmm. building constructed around here, was it not?
Yes, they're in Paso del Norte, which is actually Ciudad Juarez. That name changed in 1888.
You know, they
from Paso del Norte to Ciudad Juarez.
They lucked out. But, because, maybe they did it on purpose, but it was a good thing. They built that on a slight rise. Every other mission in our valley has been destroyed by the river. Socorro went three times. Isleta went at least once. I think Sanilin moved a time or two. But that one in Juarez, the original.
A bunch of times.
And then that one.
Still the original building and everything.
And the wood.
And that we'll also do a tour of that.
Oh, the woodwork.
During the conference.
Talk about the woodwork in there. I saw a video of that I got from a guy in New Orleans who had him shoot it. Fabulous woodwork in that building. It's amazing.
Uh-huh.
And it's not always open. If you're going to go there, you need to check with them because they open it only certain hours of the week. And you may, if you're going to go there, you may make sure that you get it when it's open. So, okay.
And we'll be doing a tour of that building, in September. And don't forget, our whole conference is free. So, I mean, it's a free conference, and we love to have any of it. It does cost you a small fee to get on the bus.
The bus,
it takes you and brings you and all that stuff. But as far as the actual conference, it's free.
You have food once in a while, right? You got to buy your own food.
You'll need some money for food.
Bring a sandwich or buy some food.
We'll have a real nice meal.
Cool.
Well, you've got some dancers appearing too with entertainment. You have Isleta del Sur Pueblo social dancers, and you have the Ballet Folklorico Casas Grandes Mexico, and a musical performance by Macawi.
I've heard that.
Macawi is a Tarahumara. He's actually a Rarámuri native, and he'll be here. He's also a runner, and.
Cool.
But he'll be here to do, he'll also talk, he'll also have a speaking part, but he'll also, he'll be here with his, we've got a bunch of different people bringing in their goods as part of the, we also have the Rio Grande Festival that runs concurrently. That festival will show, we'll have booths, cultural booths, those here, a bunch of different cities will be here showing their goods. And that'll be at the conference at the festival's grounds, which is the Veterans Memorial Plaza in front of the church.
And those
that runs at the same time, and we'll have music and all of that stuff.
You can actually buy some of the goods, I hope?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Of course you can.
Oh, sure. Excellent. Interesting.
Sure. You'll be able to taste foods. I mean, the basic parts of the conference is, of course, the first day in Juarez. Then we move to San Elizario. And we start with gastronomy. We'll be having a wine company out of Mexico, out of the Zacatecas area. It's called De Adentro. Their wine.
Wasn't wine once a big deal around San Elizario? And I know Isleta.
Huge. It was all wine here. You had the Mission wine. Even if you go to the statue there in El Paso of the Fray, he has in one hand the lentil beans, and in the other hand he's got a bunch of grapes to show what they brought.
Well, we got to take a break here. When we come back, let's talk about some of the wine business and how, as I understand it, the comes from here. We'll talk about that in a minute. Al Borrego is a guest we have here. We got him until noon.
That's right.
Talk some more San Elizario history as well, because there's a lot going on down there. We haven't talked about the fort and where was the fort?
Oh, the fort.
The Presidio.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff there. So, hey, Al, put yourself on hold. We'll come back here and deal with that again here. And normally we would do trivia right about here, but we're not going to do that.
Don't do trivia right now, unfortunately.
But you know what we should probably do? Make up trivia and answer it ourselves. We could do that next week. In fact, you know what? We got to talk about next week because we have rescheduled Mr. Trivia himself, Bernie Sargent.
Oh, yes. He's very trivial.
We had him coming in on March 21st. That got rescheduled for a special for Talk El Paso. So we've got Bernie coming in on April the 18th. That's next Saturday. And I've asked Bernie to take a look, not only History A to Z, but...
It's been interesting. I saw the little book you gave him. Yeah. I went, this is what he gave you?
Well, that's what
but,
I had.
But it was a good start.
The internet is full of stuff. But Coronado, you've seen that name on cleaners. You've seen it on a dry goods store.
You see it all over the place in the Southwest.
Everywhere. But and we got a high school here named Coronado.
Coronado?
And guess who was never here?
Well, isn't it the Thunderbird? They also call it the Coronado something up there, too.
But guess who was never here?
Oh, Coronado. Yeah, he kind of missed this place.
He never showed up here. So
he went north and hung left.
But the fact that he did what he did, he was a precursor to Oñate and all the stuff Oñate got into. And you're looking for the seven cities of gold. I don't think you found them. But that's another matter. And we'll also take a look at the 20 segments that we've been producing for ABC 7. That's on the April 18th. On the 25th. We're going to look at the major history and the major changes the railroads brought to El Paso in the 1880s. That was a huge event. We got all kinds of huge events in El Paso history. And see, these El Paso events that are huge are also huge in American history. This Camino Real is nothing to sneeze at.
No.
Don't even do it. But you know they'll arrest you for sneezing on a microphone for thousands of people. But the thing is about the history of El Paso, it's amazing. And so we're going to hit the railroads on that date. And we got a whole bunch of more stuff that we're looking at to put up. So in the meantime, we will take a call with Mr. Al on the phone here. We got a couple other lines open. We'll take calls about history in the Santa Lee or whatever.
Oh, and I now have Al's picture up on Facebook along with the information for the website and the phone number for San Elizario Genealogical Society. So if you have questions or information, you can go there and they can explain everything to you.
Make a day trip out of it. When Al comes back, we'll ask him about eating down there on the Mission Trail because there's a lot to do down there. And you can't go do it today, this week, but when you can, it'll be an interesting visit.
And the Fandango reunion. I want to still hear if that might be going on in May.
And did they film Lolita down there?
Did they?
I think they did. Oh, we'll have to ax.
I know they did up here.
But we're going to ax Al when he comes back. We'll ax him, okay? Throw the phone number out for Usins.
915-544-5876 or
915-90 KTSM El Paso.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by EPHistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. And by Amigos Restaurant, 2000 Montana, a block east of Cotton, open 7 days a week. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Are you ready for this week only? This week only in El Paso Week? No, you're not ready. Hey, you want to read my page?
Oh, there it is.
Oh, well, you better read your page. 3, 2, 1. El Paso Inc.
Okay.
Not yet.
All right. El Paso banks are helping local businesses reel in hundreds of millions of dollars in emergency loans.
Some El Paso health hospital workers are self-isolating, living in garages and separate rooms amid fear of bringing the coronavirus, whatever that thing is, home. I didn't want to get to this, but here we are.
Yeah.
How the community can help.
Okay, and nurses are making them for patients, coworkers, moms. Moms are sewing them for family and friends, and one El Paso business is making Corona face masks to stay in business.
Oh, boy. Celebrating its 25th year, El Paso Inc. is available for home or business.
Excuse me. To order your copy of El Paso Inc., go online to elpasoinc.com.
It's been more than 2 weeks since El Paso's Stay Home, Work Safe order was issued. Sunday night on ABC 7 Extra, Saul Sines asks the experts how El Pasoans are following that order as COVID-19 cases and deaths continue to climb.
Join host Saul Sines Sunday night at 10:35 p.m. on ABC 7 Extra.
La 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 la. The control room is into tequila in there.
He's drinking in there.
I don't know what he's doing.
No,
you need to spare.
He's drinking his water.
Can we? Oh, you think
that's what I told
you
him.
You think that's water?
It's. Oh, that's.
Oh, my. It ain't water. No, it ain't water. You know what it is? It's Mission Wine. Let's ask Al Borrego about Mission Wine.
We had beer, so let's talk about wine.
Well, you know, we'll talk about that beer thing as well. But the wine, Al, the wine was a big deal, but was it also apricot brandy was a biggie?
Yeah, brandy was big. I mean, there was all of that booze was big. Of course it was big. I mean, it still is.
Well, are you guys hiding it down there? Because every time I come down there, I don't see any. Is somebody selling it?
Yeah, we got people that sell wine down here, sure.
Because, I mean, I want to go down to the Teguas.
Local.
I want to go to the Teguas Cultural Center and get a loaf of bread. Then I want to hit down to Lacone Dairy and get a bunch of cheese. And next thing I'm going down the road for is some wine. I don't know where to go.
Well, you know, we've got the Teguas have their own wine as well, you know.
Do they? Well, they were, back in the day, they were huge into wine until they got their city stolen out from under them and all their land. That's another whole story to talk about someday. But that whole wine business, who was doing it? I mean, is there really a place to go buy a bottle of Mission Trail wine or something?
No, there isn't yet, but it needs to get kicked up again. I mean, this whole area was nothing but wine. Of course, they started the old Mission wine first, you know, the for the masses and that kind of stuff.
Oh, sure.
But I hear stories here in San Eli where there was a place that had this huge barrel, and the kids over at the school would run in there and hit the tap at lunchtime, you know. Elementary school, mind you, all right?
And the afternoon was different, wasn't it?
Yeah. Everybody attended. They slept right through it.
Oh, my. Well, the thing about the whole history, of course, the missions and the priests, they needed wine for the mass, and that was really good. But they made a little extra, did they not? Generally speaking,
yeah. I mean, there was a lot of wine. Yeah, from something that I remember hearing was that at one point there was a blight or something in Europe because on the vines over there, and they ended up taking seedlings from here and to get it going again in Europe. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I heard the same thing about California, that a lot of the California vineyards that began in the early days of Spanish occupation, or whatever you want to call it, Spanish placing over there, that they had the vines from El Paso that went over there. Is that anywhere near true?
Probably could have been, because, you know, the Camino actually went through the Borrego Desert, Anza Desert there in southern part of California, and they went all the way up to San Francisco. So from Janos, which is Casas Grandes area, that road goes all the way up to San Francisco. The Camino Real in California starts north of San Francisco and goes south to San Jose in Baja. So it goes backwards. That road, see, it stands to maybe have some truth to that maybe some of the vines from here ended up in the Scobey Bay area. I mean, a lot of the people I know during the Pueblo Revolt, many people, Spaniards, went to Janos.
Oh.
They moved to Janos, which is near Casas Grandes. And that road goes north, you know, through what is now Tucson and all the way up to San Francisco.
There's an easy way to get through all those mountains, I take it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly the whole point. They found the easy way, the easy routes. Well, the natives did. You know, they were old native routes.
Oh, yeah. Well, in that case, let's talk a moment about El Paso, because El Paso is a name that was El Paso del Rio del Norte. Am I correct? Is that what that was?
Well, Juarez was Paso del Norte. Juarez was the Paso del Norte. El Paso, you know, you got to remember, always it comes in 1873. You know, we're talking here 1598.
But Oñate put it on the map as El Paso del Rio del Norte. And it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't to pass through the mountains. It was the place where they crossed the river, the pass across the river. That's how I have always heard that.
The actual, when he crossed the river on May the 4th, he actually called it El Puerto.
The port.
Not El Paso.
Or the door.
The port. The door, yeah.
The door, the entrance, yeah.
So we should be named
that's
the door.
What it was. When, if you look at the archives, that's what it says. Yeah, I mean, por ahí pasó. I mean, George Sanchez on his emails, it says, por aquí pasó, por aquí pasé, you know. And it's kind of a standard term that it's the pass, you know. If you think of paso, el paso is the pace, not the pass. El pueblo is the pass.
Whatever it is, we got the name now.
Really look at Spanish.
We're stuck with it, but whatever it is.
The name's great. I mean, that's where El Paso, Texas is.
And you
where he crossed.
You mentioned it back in 1850 when El Paso County was formed by the state of Texas. It took in Culberson County and six other counties. You said down to Del Rio?
Down to Del Rio.
Oh.
It took Jeff Davis County,
Big Ben,
Culberson County, Pecos County, all the way down to Del Rio.
Can you imagine being the local padre and he has to get on his donkey and get down there,
man,
and talk to everybody?
He'll never get about a year.
He'll never get back, you know. And
Presidio had their county though already. That county was there. It went around Presidio.
All right. So the other thing I want to ask you about was actually with the Presidio of San Elizario, because we're talking the fact that the churches are built differently. All the missions in the El Paso and Juarez area were built as a crucifix. They're a cross. And you go in at the bottom of the cross, and that always faces east. You're talking the one in Juarez, Guadalupe, Isleta, Socorro. But you get to San Elizario, what happened? It's facing north.
Right. Well, it's facing northwest.
Northwest?
Kind of always face northwest.
But it's not it's not a cruciform either.
No, not even. No, it's a chapel.
It's a box.
It's like any military. It's a military installation. So they build a chapel and all that, just like Fort Bliss has a chapel. You know, they all have, even like a boat has a chapel for all denominations. It was a place of worship for the soldiers. So that's what they're built as. And it comes to be because you end up with three missions here, which was Socorro, Isleta, and Senecu. Those three missions ended up here after the revolt. And they needed protection. They moved the Presidio from El Carrizal, which is southwest of Villa Humada.
How many miles?
And they moved that. I'm going to say about 150.
Okay.
About 100, 150.
So they moved to San Elizario.
They actually moved it to near Puerto Venir, which is further away.
No,
it's south along the river. They actually put it there first, but it didn't work. It was too far from the missions, so they decided to move it. Then they moved it over here to the next to the river. That's how it ended up. So it took two movements to get it over here.
And was San Elizario already established when that happened?
No, all that you had here was a stopping point. Here in San Isidro, when Oñate came through here, he left a rancheria. Later on, it became a hacienda called La Hacienda de los Tiburcios. That hacienda grew into, imagine the Pony Express. You know, they got these little points where they stop along the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For water, for supplies. And that was the Camino Real. Along the Camino Real, you got all these stops along the way. So there was a big hacienda since it was... He left a guy here in charge when he went through. He was leaving people along the way. So when they moved the Presidio here to Hacienda Los Tiburcios, which a lot of people think is the old, what they call the Viceroy Palace, Casa Ronquillo, that was the old hacienda. And they built the Presidio here. The Presidio of San Elizario is the second oldest fort in the U.S.,
really?
Next to St. Augustine. Yeah,
really?
St. Augustine, Florida.
Talk about that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's, if you look at dates of Presidios in now the U.S., I mean, that's the second oldest fort.
It's also...
It was here in...
It's also... Go ahead. Well, it's also the more rare than a mission. I mean, there's three missions in the valley still standing. There's only one Presidio chapel.
Right. Well, there's one of the missions, Senecu, is down. See, that one's, it's actually in the Mexican side today, but the ruins are still there.
No, I'm counting Guadalupe as a standing.
Yeah, Guadalupe. Now, that's a different one. See, Guadalupe, if you look at Juarez, the Presidio de Paso del Norte, because there was a Presidio there.
Oh.
El Presidio Paso del Norte, which was the Juarez Presidio. That presidio was there to protect Guadalupe, Misión de San José, and Misión de San Lorenzo. They had three missions as well.
And are those
San
gone?
The other two are standing, and so is Guadalupe.
And the other two are gone? Is that it?
No. There's two of them. San Jose and Guadalupe are still standing. San Lorenzo is also ruined.
Okay. But I have heard a rumor that there was another one called Senecu somewhere.
That Senecu's one of ours.
Okay.
See, you got to have three missions. You got Senecu, you got Socorro, and Isleta.
Well, where was Senecu
but
at?
Before,
was that...
you remember, the river was on the other side of all of them before.
Oh, it moved around a lot.
Yeah, we were all on what is today the Mexican side back then.
Right. Okay. So they built up against the river, not having a clue it was going to move necessarily, but that changed history dramatically when the river started moving around. And just to finish that point, the United States and Mexico finally had a 100-year argument over where's the boundary. That became settled at Chamizal, and they put the river in concrete at that point. But backing up to, 1916, they put the dams up in New Mexico so they could turn on or off the Rio Grande.
And There was a dam near Socorro, Texas, as well, a rock dam that was built by the Spaniards early on as well. You know, you had the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty that was done. You know, I mean, that's how they decided where the river was, which river down here. Because we had two rivers for a while down here in San Elizario. We were in an island.
Isla.
From Isleta all the way down to Tornillo was an island.
Mm-hmm.
You had the one on the east of us and the one that is there now. So during the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty, they decided the deepest channel was going to be the border. That's how San Elizario ends up on the American side.
Isn't that amazing that history just changed hands? And we picked up a bunch of tourist attractions. Yay!
Thanks, seeing how that works.
Yeah, that's it. And the thing is that when they did that, the government of the United States let the citizens, because they didn't know whether they were Mexican or American or what. So they let them go either way. You go to Mexico and live over there, and you had 2 years, your citizenship would still hold up.
Oh, okay.
You could wait 2 years and come back and still be American. So a lot of families split up to see where was the better deal, the bigger, better deal.
Oh.
Of course, we know where the bigger, better deal ended up, but you still have some families that are split up. Some of them still live in Mexico, and some of them still live on the U.S. side.
And there's another group.
One of them is Connie Vasquez. You know Connie Vasquez?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Her family split up.
Well, she's an interesting sort all by herself. Another group, that's another show. But another group that had themselves split were the Tiguas, because a bunch of their, quote, land grant ended up in what is now Mexico, right? And they can't claim that for nothing, right?
Well, that's another show.
Another show entirely.
You got to remember the Tiguas come here during the Pueblo Revolt in 1680.
Right.
You know, and it's already New Spain. It's New Spain in 1598.
Right.
So, you know, who had the land grants?
Well, the thing was, there's somebody. I've turned Martha Vera onto some people who say they found a copy of what may be the land grant. And it was at a lawyer's estate sale, and we talked about it with Martha last week. So she's going to research into that, and there may be some new news coming out of that. I'm not too sure. But see, that's the thing. Somebody with old shoeboxes in the corner, and Uncle Henry dies, and he was a lawyer, and he had all his documents.
Yeah.
That stuff is still going on today. So we'll let you know what we find out about that one. But
that'd be good. That'd be good to know.
But the Tiguas, as I understand it, one reason the Tiguas didn't get totally recognized by the United States government, because when Abraham Lincoln was trying to solidify New Mexico, the territory, during the preceding the Civil War, he didn't want to recognize the guys in a potential Confederate state down here in El Paso, the Tigua Indians.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't get any help from Lincoln at the time. That's how I understood
right.
that story. Is that about right?
That's probably had a lot to do with it, you know.
Interesting history. We have one more break in there, Mike, or what do? We don't owe you two more breaks, do we? We can't. You have two more breaks? Are you serious? We can't handle that.
We've got a lot of time.
Okay, we're going to take a break here with Al Borrego on the phone. If you have a question, Al is sitting here. Well, he's not sitting here. His phone call is sitting here.
In San Elizario.
His phone call is sitting here. So that's what we got. And we'll talk to Al in a minute. But throw that number out there.
Give us a call at 915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by EPHistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. And by Amigos Restaurant, 2000 Montana, a block east of Cotton, open 7 days a week. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Got a lot going on here. We got a caller in the queue here named Ray. Ray, we're going to put you on the radio with Al Borrego. Go ahead, Ray.
Good morning. I've got a question for Al. I've got an interesting, quirky pastime that my wife thinks is weird. I enjoy wandering through cemeteries and looking at gravestones and, you know, see what it says. And I'm curious. I don't recall ever seeing a cemetery in that area. I've not been looking for one.
Nobody
Are
ever.
Are there any down in that area?
No, nobody ever died in.
Interesting people.
Nobody ever died in San Elizario.
No.
No, just kidding. Al, what about cemeteries?
They're great histories.
Well, we have the oldest population. Nobody dies here. I'm just kidding. We have two cemeteries. We have the original cemetery, which is right next to the hall here by the church. And it doesn't have any gravestones or anything because they were all wood. They officially stopped burying people there in 1850. But somebody, I believe, was buried. One child was buried in 1890 or something like that. But we do have a list of everybody that was buried there. And thanks to Lillian Trujillo. And where our main cemetery is at Thompson and Socorro Road. If you take a left on Thompson or right, which there's only one way on Thompson, you'll see the cemetery over there. But that's our primary cemetery. It's full at this point, so we'd like to see somebody come in and put in the new cemetery.
Ray, can you go find that?
Everybody's getting taken to Isleta.
Ray, can you find that?
I think I can find it. I'm familiar with those roads. But I guess my second question is, are there any people of historical note in either of those that have been identified?
I haven't really gotten into. We're in the process of rehabilitating the old cemetery, which is the one with no gravestones. But I know there's some soldiers, Spanish soldiers, were buried there. Probably some military guys were buried there because the fort here was used by the military for years. And so it was here, and we had the Buffalo Soldiers were here for a few months. You might have had a death or two there. So it's just a matter of actually looking in and reviewing that list and doing some work, genealogy work on them, and see what's buried there.
Ray, let me suggest something. Let me suggest that Ray go down and talk to the people at the Portales Museum once it's back open. I presume they're closed. But that would be a good place to start if you're going to go on a quest. Magda still working down there for free, along with Sam Sanchez?
Yeah.
George Sanchez?
The one that Sam works for free, but Sam works there on Fridays, and he's at the jail on Tuesdays.
Fair enough.
Pilar Munoz is our museum director there. She's there 99% of the time.
All right, there you go, Ray.
But, anybody there will be happy to help you.
That's what we got for you here, Ray.
Get open again.
Thanks for ringing up here. We're going to take
good
a break
show
here.
Today.
Yeah, thank you very much. We have a good time doing it. We're going to take a break and come back here and wrap up. What is in the comment? You had a quick question?
Well, I was just going to make a comment that if you go to the San Elizario genealogy website that I posted on our Facebook page, you will find the links to the Portales Museum and all that. So that'll help them if they need to find it.
Ray, it's all online. Check that out. We shall be back in just a moment.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. brought to you by ephistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive, by Monterey Asset Management, by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping, by Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563, and by Amigos Restaurant, 2000 Montana, a block east of Cotton, open 7 days a week. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Pohl.
Well, we could tell you again all the phone numbers for Amigos and for Pepe's, but just look them up online. Actually, Amigos isn't to have a great online presence, but Pepe's does. And so anyway, what is that? Got Amigos here, 533-0155. And do you have Pepe's anywhere nearby?
Now you tell me.
I got lost in the paperwork.
Well, Pepe's also has Facebook, too. That's true. You can talk to him there.
Got Al Borrego on the line here for a couple more minutes, Al. Let's wrap up with the conference that was going to be your 29th annual. Is that what you said it was? 29th?
Right. 29th annual.
Wow. It was going to be in April, coming up in a couple of weeks, which is why we scheduled this radio show. But in the meantime, you got bumped like everybody else to the future, and you're going to do this in September 10, 11, 12, right?
And
13. Okay. Give us the details, presuming it's all going to work like we hope it will. And you say it starts in Juarez. How do people – they go on the website, first of all, right?
Yeah, you can go check it on the website. You can go to theriograndefestival.com or the sanelisariogenealogy.com, sanelisariohistoricdistrict.org. All of those have it in there. Yeah, the idea is the first day we'll be in Juarez, and we'll get everybody back here. And then on Friday, we'll start out with the conference talks and stuff. The festival will also take off that afternoon. Saturday, we'll continue. On Saturday, we also do our sister city thing. The whole idea of the conference and what we're doing is to prepare the nomination for the UNESCO thing.
Okay.
And the idea is to create sister cities. San Elisario has more sister cities in Mexico than anybody in the world.
Well, and, they got a lot of siblings.
We're gonna, yeah, well.
Big
well,
family.
You know, the idea is we do it through Sister Cities International, and the city of San Elisario works really good with that, doing that and getting us connected. And these are all in the Camino Real, see. So the idea is to connect all these cities and everybody work together and create a tourism project.
And what you're doing, basically is explaining to everyone who will listen, and they all should listen. You're explaining to everyone what exactly is the history here. And in my estimation, this is more interesting history. It's more important history than a lot of things that happened on the East Coast. But don't tell them, right?
Well, relevant.
True. I mean, that's true. I mean, it created this 1,600-mile corridor of commerce that's still going today. I mean, it brought everything in here when the